Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio and Network Affiliates. Hello, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator, producer, and co-host of the show. And joining me in the virtual studio today, I got my fingers crossed, is my colleague and co-host, Dr. Phil Marshall. Phil, are you with us?
Greg, can you hear me this morning?
Yes, I can.
Well, how about that? I'm pleased to be with you as always.
Okay, good. Glad you could make it. This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the emerging digital health economy from idea to business models and even occasionally best practices, as they can be defined to this point in time. And making an encore appearance today is Jean Ann Booth, CEO and founder of Yanaliware, which is a startup company that is building a wearable OnStar for seniors, and we'll hear more about that in a minute. But first up, let me give you some additional background on Jean Ann Booth. She's a serial, besides being CEO and founder of the company, she's a serial entrepreneur. She started Yanaliware after selling previous startups to Texas Instruments and Apple, two well-heeled acquirers. Jean Ann was the founder of Luminary Micro, the creators of the Stellaris microcontroller platform, and the first to market with the ARM Cortex M3-based microcontroller solutions. That's a mouthful. Luminary Micro was purchased by Texas Instruments in May of 2009 and was one of the top VC-backed M&A's merger and acquisitions of 2009. Jean Ann retired from Texas Instruments in 2012, after serving as the general manager for TI's Stellaris family of products. Jean Ann was also a founder of Intrinsity, the creators of the graphics chip in Apple iPad products. Intrinsity sold to Apple in 2010. Jean Ann holds a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from the University of Texas at Austin, go Horns, and an MSCE from the National Technical University. So with that overview, Phil, over to you. Help us get to know Jean Ann.
Happy to be talking today. Jean Ann, can you guys?
Sorry, Phil, just repeat your question if you would, please.
Can you hear Phil?
Barely.
Well, there we go. Okay, I'll tell you what, I will go ahead and dial in. Greg, why don't you go ahead and kick it off? I'll dial in to the host queue with my regular phone.
Okay, sounds good. Jean Ann?
Yes.
So, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure being back on the show, Greg. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome. And so where do we find you this morning? Where are you calling in from?
I am calling in from the office in Austin, Texas, where I am attached to my desk as I have been for quite some time now. But we'll talk about that later.
Excellent. So we're buying a little time here till Phil joins us. But let's just say that we're going to cover a little ground today. We're going to talk a little bit about you, what you're doing, and the digital health marketplace, shall we say, writ large. To perhaps dive into your take as an entrepreneur in the space who's sort of earned her wings, if you will, in venture-backed startups. What you're seeing, and particularly from the point of view of being a hardware tech innovator as well as someone who's trying to serve that ecosystem of offering product that people want to buy these days. So I thought we would cover kind of the landscape, and let's see if Phil has joined us. Phil, are you back?
Yeah, hey there.
Hello, Phil. Okay, good. All right, well, I was just giving, I was a little buying time till your return. So let me hand it to you, and I don't know if you had a chance to check your email, but if you got any of that, but there you go. Over to you.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry for that delay, and I did hear your question, which I think is a great place to start. Just to give our audience a little bit more background on Jean Ann. She's an incredibly successful and gifted entrepreneur in the hardware space in particular, and bringing that to health IT to help those who need it the most. And I've been working with Jean Ann for a while as co-partner within the startup Health Crowd, which is a great environment for health IT startups in the U.S. And so, Jean Ann, why don't we start with this? Your company is beginning to make some great headway on delivering its wearable technology and helping, as I said, those who might need it most. Give us a sense of where you stand with your company and the wearable technology that you've developed.
Sure. And thank you for the very generous introduction for both of you guys. I'm not sure there's room for me in my room now. UniWear is actually, we've had quite a bit of change in just the last little bit. We launched yesterday our Kickstarter, and that is actually making possible for people to back UniWear and get access then to the first of our wearables, which has been described by some focus groups as kind of an OnStar for seniors. So in a watch form, we provide discrete support for falls, medication reminders, and a guard against wandering. And there's no buttons on the watch at all. So that helps to make it, you know, a discreet, unobtrusive, not socially stigmatizing solution for people who want to live independently but might be just a little bit vulnerable.
And I know that you've been making a lot of headway on the hardware technology itself, new designs, and further advancements on the sensor technology. Give our audience a sense for the kinds of things that it enables its wearers to do and some of the potential benefits.
Sure. So the actual wearable itself, let's just call it a watch because that's what this wearable is. It looks like a watch, and in fact, you know, when I wear prototypes to things like Startup Health quarterly gatherings, you know, I know that we're getting closer and closer to the final form factor of the watch when nobody realizes that I'm wearing a prototype of an assistive device, and that's exactly what we want. We want nobody to actually realize that you're wearing anything other than a good-looking piece of jewelry unless they actually see it give you help. So sensor-wise, we only have activity and location sensors intentionally on the device. The technology exists to put more sensors on, but once you do so, you've got a much longer path to market through your certification requirements. And so that's one of those things that actually is a real challenge in the digital health marketplace and how digital health differs from kind of the entrepreneurial scene in non-digital health areas, right? So we have lots of growth, lots of change happening in digital health. It's really exciting, and goodness knows we really do need lots of change that results in improvement. But, you know, the great thing about that change is that although we can result in a huge leap forward, the thing that is concerning for many people is that, you know, change is, of course, chaotic. And, you know, entrepreneurs like myself, we thrive in chaos. But, you know, frankly, most people don't. And especially when we're talking about changes in the way that you manage your own health, that tends to make people a little bit more cautious. And, of course, we also have the FDA appropriately helping us make even more cautious changes there. So digital health as a function is actually progressing a little bit more slowly than other wearable technologies have. And so one of those questions that I get a lot is, you know, there are wearables on the market that are part of the quantified self movement, especially, you know, tracking your fitness, your number of steps, your hours of sleep. And those products can be created from a hardware basis and get to market really quickly. But what most people don't realize is that those products are actually not certified by the FDA, and in fact, the sensors can be extremely inaccurate. So your doctor is not actually going to be very interested in the data that comes from your consumer health, you know, quantified self wearable, because it's not actionable from the doctor. They can't actually take action on anything unless they know that it's accurate. So once you do that and you go through the full FDA certification process for that level of sensor technology, you're talking a minimum $6 million just on the FDA certification part and 24 months time to market. And that's why you see everybody go to market with a consumer device that's not necessarily very accurate, but at least they get to market quickly. That drove us to simply put activity and location sensors on our watch, which allows us to learn your lifestyle, which is how we actually do things like provide that guard against wandering and help with medication reminders.
Well, that's a great overview. You know, it's a timely topic today. Forbes and other publications have just today written articles about how Apple, with its launch of the Apple Watch, has actually withdrawn many of the health features that were expected. The sensor functions that were expected are apparently not going to be in the initial launch of the Apple Watch. Instead, really more of the fitness-oriented kinds of capabilities only is what they've apparently announced. And apparently, from these articles, it looks as if it is an FDA and sensor and just, you know, sort of state of the technology that has caused Apple, who I think we can all admit have all the resources in the world, to actually pull back from delivery. And so I think your point about how difficult and challenging it is to do this well is a good one. And so I'm wondering what your perspective is on some of these big entrants in the market, Apple, Samsung among them, and the role that they potentially will play, because even they apparently are having some difficulty here.
I think there are a couple of things here. So one is this: you know, when you look at digital health as kind of a conversation topic that you're talking about, not just quantified self, you know, consumer fitness, accuracy doesn't matter, but you're actually looking at digital health. There's a couple of things to keep in mind that are a little hidden from the average consumer, and one of those is the accuracy of the sensors and the expense and time required to validate that accuracy for an FDA-approved product, which if you're going to put real medical sensors on it, it needs to be FDA-approved. And the other piece that people have a tendency to kind of overlook is what actually is required to make those quantified self devices useful in a medical center setting, is that the devices actually need to be able to separate the data from the actionable data. And they're certainly not there yet. So if you kind of look at it, I mean, you're a doctor, looking at it from the doctor's perspective, you've got a patient that you gave a wearable to, and it's going to track their number of steps every day. And you're going to get all of that data about their number of steps. And their particular condition requires that they be physically active for a certain amount of time. If that data actually comes to you and becomes a part of your record for that patient, then you become legally liable for reviewing that information. And the, you know, the signal-to-noise ratio is really low. So you've got a whole lot of data, but the only actionable data is the days where they don't meet the minimum requirement that you set for them. And if you could just get only that notification, then it becomes a useful device that, you know, if I was a doctor, which I'm absolutely not, that I would be willing to say, okay, I'm willing to provide this device for my patients because it notifies me when there's something that I need to know. It doesn't just give me that alert fatigue of every single bit of data now I have to look at.
Well, it's an important, it's a really important point, this idea of signal and noise and how that plays a role in patient-generated health data in the actual clinical environment and in the care of patients. This is something that I believe is a critically important issue that has yet to be addressed. When we see things like the Apple Health platform being embraced, at least from a marketing perspective, by so many large hospitals and health systems, there's really a couple things that seem to be missing from those announcements. One is this exact issue that we just talked about, signal from the noise. How is it that these systems plan to utilize the data that's coming in an ongoing way without some sort of added capacity to decipher that information in the kind of time frame that the care teams can accommodate in their workflow? If it's just streaming into the patient's MyChart, for example, how exactly will that be used? Or will it only simply be available at the next patient visit, in which case it really hasn't necessarily changed the course of care? But if it is ongoing and continuous, then isn't it really a deluge of data? How do you decipher that signal from the noise in a way that supports more continuous and collaborative care? These issues have not been addressed, and I'm curious, as we think about that issue, going from visit-based care, encounter-based care, to care that's more continuous and collaborative, how do you see patient-generated health data and this kind of hopefully signals that we're able to get from that data, how do you see the healthcare systems pivoting to be able to accommodate that so that they can make more real-time decisions with their patients?
So I think that's a great question. So I think actually it's not as much the healthcare systems that will pivot as it needs to be the solutions that are being provided to healthcare that have to pivot. Right, the ownership and responsibility of creating actionable data from the deluge of data that's created by a sensor-enabled device, such as a wearable, belongs to the person or the company who's created that wearable. And so, you know, it's not going to be the healthcare system that's going to have to lead through that. It needs to be the devices themselves. They're not solving the market pain point, which is creating a better outcome for the patient. So I think that's one of the biggest deals. And so I want to tie this together with your previous question, which was, so what about, you know, Apple and Samsung and those who entered the wearable watch and the wearable fitness type market? And I think the answer is this. Eventually, they'll be going into digital health, but they do so from a younger generation focus. Basing your internet access for data transfer through your smartphone, accessing, you know, other classified health devices or just the wearable itself. And, you know, where we have the ability with those devices as consumers, the younger generation, say boomers and below, we have a somewhat different outlook on owning our own health data. We tend to be a little bit more responsible for our health data, for understanding and agreeing what's going on with our health and our treatment plans if we have one. And sometimes, you know, driving doctors nuts because we don't take every word uttered by our doctor to be absolute gospel. In our particular business, our target market is 75 up. And in my mom's generation, she's 81 years old. You know, every single word that the doctor says is absolute gospel. And she will never ask a question. She will never clarify instructions. And she'll never proactively reach out to the doctor if there might be an issue going on and perhaps the treatment plan is not working correctly, because she's doing what the doctor said to do and they know everything. So there's a split in the generational behavior, and we're making it a little bit perhaps worse or larger by what we're doing in digital health, because all of our digital health devices are actually targeted at the younger population. And so to some degree, we're actually leaving behind the older generations, those who are older than the boomers. And there are some 17 million seniors who are above the age of 75 that live independently in the U.S. today. That's an awful lot of people that we're ignoring. And, of course, that has a personal meaning to me because that includes my 81-year-old mother.
Well, Jeanne-Anne, a question that I constantly hear, I'm sure you must get it all the time, is, are you sure that seniors are even going to use technology? I always sort of chuckle at that as I see every senior over the age of 60 that I've interacted with using technology to some extent or another. But I'd really like to hear, how do you answer that challenge that seniors simply aren't going to use technology for their health?
So, I mean, it kind of goes back to the question of how is the medical health system going to deal with separating signal from noise and all of that data streaming from devices? It's not the medical health system's responsibility. It's the creator of the device. And the same thing happens when you talk about, how are seniors going to be able to use technology? It's not about seniors. It's about the technology being easy enough to use that it works for anybody. And that's exactly the philosophy and mindset that we used in the development of our Kinega watch. And it's all driven by speech. So you simply talk to the watch and it simply talks to you. There's no buttons. There's no programming. We use artificial intelligence to learn everything that we can learn so that there doesn't have to be any setup. And that means that it is usable by everybody. That's the goal.
You know, when I hear you talk about the ease of use and simplicity, and I think about the technologies that younger generations have adopted so wildly, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, I'm wondering if there's really as much a difference between the generations and their need and desire for simplicity and a straightforward value and timely response. And I really wonder if there's much of a difference between the generations on what they need and desire, as we've all been led to believe. What do you think about that? Is there a big difference between generations when it comes to the need for that simplicity?
I'm not sure, I'm certainly no expert, right? I'm just an engineer, but I'm not sure that it's as much a generational difference, but I do think that there is a difference perhaps that is relative to your life experiences and where you are in your life. So you're going to be more comfortable, from what I've seen, you're going to be more comfortable working with technology that's like the technology that you learned when you were young, when your brain was very elastic and you were learning like crazy. But I would guess, although I won't be around here to look at it, but I would guess that today's young folks, when they get to be my mom's age, they will be having the same kind of questions with the technology that is created at that time and talking about how they wish it was just as easy as the tech that they had when they were a kid. I don't think that the feeling changes, but the technology, the technology that you're comfortable working with, I think does actually show where we were with technology when you were in some of those earlier stages in your life. For certain,
well, now, Jeanne-Anne, I do want to challenge you that you might not be around when they get to your mother's age, because Time Magazine recently said that we're going to live to 142 years old. So I think you need some longer-term planning. Don't get that retirement set up just yet. You've got many, many roads and many, many years ahead of you, no doubt, as a continuous entrepreneur. And that brings me really to my next question. We've got about 5 minutes left. And that is, as you do look ahead, as you look ahead to the next 5 or 10 years, let's say that passive data collection and analysis and feedback becomes a regular part of all of the generations, what's next? What's the next thing? If you were to advise entrepreneurs, you're in startup health, there are new companies coming into startup health all the time. As you advise these young entrepreneurs that are in that environment, what would you say would be the most ripe area to look at in the 5 to 10 year time frame? What's going to be most exciting as we get through the next several years, assuming that consumer empowerment and use of data and analysis of that data and making healthcare more on demand and continuous, what's the big idea that's going to follow on from that?
Oh, goodness. You know, for me, I think when we have easy enough technology, easy enough capability for people to be making good choices and understanding the consequences of their choices, wouldn't it be neat to look at all of the time that we get back because we're not dealing with the consequences of disease that could have been avoided, and because we're not just having to spend time on things that we could have managed differently if only we had the easy tools to do so. What that looks like, boy, I don't know. You know, it kind of makes me feel
Eric Topol is famous for saying, the patient will see you now. And it really is becoming a patient or individual or consumer centric world as we know now. But that idea that you floated out there, really kind of the next wave of being able to look at the analysis of your data, is inspiring because as we move forward, as we're tracking more information, as we're sharing our status, our progress, our outcomes more readily, it is interesting to look at what the analysis of that could give back to the individual and the healthcare system about what's really working in healthcare and what's not. And that is an exciting potential to be able to, using data from the real world, like the kinds of data and analysis that you're doing and that you're working on, could allow greater insight into the kinds of treatments, the kinds of actions, the kinds of things that really do work versus those that don't in healthcare. And that is truly an exciting future. And so with that, and we only have 1.5 minutes left now, I'm wondering what the next year is going to look like for you, because no doubt we're going to want to retouch base. What are the most exciting things that you're looking at in the near-term horizon for you and your company?
Well, certainly the nearest-term horizon, which is the thing going on right now, is our Kickstarter campaign. So you can find us on Kickstarter if you look for Unaliware, which means friend in Cherokee, or Caniga, which is Cherokee for speech. And I do have a Cherokee background. As we go through 2015, heading into early 2016, when we will supply our Kickstarter rewards, you'll see our beta program toward the end of the year. We'll lock down our design and the final industrial design. Lots of communication with all of our backers about how all of that looks. And we have an absolutely slammed year, but I'm really, really looking forward to getting to be there, because I'm really looking forward to being able to deliver the independence with dignity that is why we were created.
Well, congratulations on all the progress to date. Good luck in the Kickstarter program, and do check it out, folks. Check out Unaliware the wearable OnStar for seniors, Caniga, on Kickstarter. And I know that the next time we speak, we'll be talking about even more exciting things that you're working on. Jeannie Ann Booth, thank you so much for joining us on This Week in
Thank
Health
you.
Innovation.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
And that'll have to be the last word for today's broadcast. I want to thank our guest, Jean Ann Booth, CEO, founder of YanaliWare, for her time and insights today. Follow Jean Ann on Twitter via at Jean Ann Booth. That's JeanAnneBooth. And YanaliWare, at YanaliWare, UnaliWear. And check them out on the web at a .com location as well. We do this weekly at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. Join us next week for another episode of This Week in Health Innovation. For Greg, this is Greg Masters. For Dr. Phil Marshall, thanks for joining us. Talk to you then. Bye now.